Welcome to Celebrate Poe, episode 226, Poe Review number 2. My name is George Bartley, and this episode is the second in a series devoted to a chronological look at the first half of Edgar Allan Poe's life. Greetings, Mr. Bartley. Hello, Mr. Poe. Let's begin this episode with your thoughts about the year 1820. As I'm sure you remember, you were attending Stoke Newington then, approximately 5 miles from your residency in London. Yes, Mr. Bartley, during the spring of 1820, John Allan became seriously ill with dropsy. To make matters worse, his finances were declining in a most worrisome manner, owing to an unfortunate recession in the tobacco market. After this most worrisome development, John Allan basically had no other choice but to wind up his business affairs in England. And that spring, he had to leave England and return to the United States with his family. I left the Manor House School with mixed emotions on May the 26th. My family first traveled across the country to Liverpool, and then on June the 14th, we set sail for London on the ship Martha. We had resided for 5 years in England and Scotland and were glad to be returning to the United States. On July the 21st, a Friday, we arrived in New York. Then on August the 2nd, we arrived in Richmond, where we stayed at the home of Mr. Charles Ellis. Now, remember, Mr. Ellis was my father's business partner, and this was on the corner of Franklin and 2nd Streets. That must have been quite an adjustment for you, Mr. Poe. Well, Mr. Bartley, all I can say is that it certainly was. But the situation was made slightly better because that autumn, the Allan family moved to a new house on Clay Street. Here I learned to swim in Chaco Creek, and I read Robinson Crusoe for the first of many times. I later reviewed the book in the Southern Literary Messenger 16 years later. I can even remember how it began. Well, Mr. Poe, could you favor us with some of the introduction for your review for Robinson Crusoe? I thought you would never ask. Daniel Defoe, The Life and Surprising Adventures of Robinson Crusoe of York, Mariner, with a biographical account of Defoe, illustrated with 50 characteristic cuts from drawings by William Harvey, Esquire, and engraved by Adams, New York, published by Harper and Brothers. This publication is worthy of the Harpers. It is an honor to the country, not more in the fine taste displayed in its getting up than as evincing a just appreciation of an invaluable work. How fondly do we recur in memory to those enchanted days of our boyhood when we first learned to grow serious over Robinson Crusoe, when we first found the spirit of wild adventure enkindling within us, as by the dim firelight we labored out line by line, the marvelous import of those pages, and hung breathless and trembling with eagerness over their absorbing, over their enchaining interest. Well, Mr. Poe, how was your life in Richmond at that time? That September, I enrolled at the preparatory school of Joseph W. Clark of Trinity College, where I studied Latin, French, mathematics, and classical literature. Now, remember, I was just 11 years old at the time. I was a pupil at the preparatory school until March 1825, studying under Mr. Clark and later his successor, Mr. William Burke. And this was a most eventful year in my youth regarding a certain athletic accomplishment. Yes, Mr. Poe, I think I know what you're referring to. Why don't you tell our listeners about it? I swam at least 6 miles up the James River against a most heavy tide. Wasn't that rather unsafe, Mr. Poe? Oh, my schoolmaster followed in a boat in case I needed help. Also, regarding another incident that is somewhat different, but of definitely no lesser importance. I must explain by saying that during his tour of America, General Lafayette visited Richmond, Virginia, in October of 1824. The Richmond Junior Volunteers partook in the ceremonies welcoming him, and I am proud to say that I was a lieutenant of the Junior Volunteers. Well, Mr. Poe, I'm sure that your early military experience meant a great deal to you. Think of West Point and the Army. Ah, yes, but there was also a literary side to me. Around 1824, I wrote a 2-line poem, "Last night with many cares and toils oppressed, weary I laid me on a couch to rest." Yes, Mr. Poe, I believe this is your earliest surviving poem. It was never published during your lifetime, nor used as a part of a longer poem. Yes, and on March the 26th, a most momentous event occurred that literally changed the fortunes of the Allen family. John Allen's uncle, William Galt, passed away in Richmond. John Allen was named in Mr. Galt's will and inherited a significant fortune. In fact, that summer, John Allen purchased an enormous brick mansion called Moldavia for $14,950 and moved his family there. Well, Mr. Poe, from what I understand, Mr. William Galt was an extremely rich man, and his wealth had the potential to improve your life significantly. One would surmise that this is a truism. For example, on February the 14th, 1826, I was able to enter the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, a school that was frequented by the more important families of Virginia, some have said. The school was founded by Thomas Jefferson and first opened its doors on March the 7th of the previous year. So, Mr. Poe, some might say that things were really looking up for you. I wish that were completely true. I found myself in the position of feuding with John Allen regarding gambling debts of $2,000 that I unfortunately incurred at the University of Virginia. And John Allen would certainly be able to help you all with all of his wealth. But I had a sense of honor and insisted that the debts be paid. However, John Allen refused to help me. I left the university and traveled to my family in Baltimore. Unless I'm mistaken, you seem to react to a renewed sense of independence from John Allen, and the following year, you enlisted in the United States Army under the name Edgar A. Perry. Ah, yes, Mr. Bartley, and in my first book, Tamerlane and Other Poems, which was published in Boston by Calvin F. S. Thomas, I did not include my name. I was noted only as, quote, "a Bostonian," unquote. Perhaps that dedication had something to do with your mother's love of Boston. Perhaps. But Mr. Bartley, from what I understand, the thin pamphlet that is Tamerlane sold less than 50 copies, and many of those were likely distributed free for reviews. After my earthly death, the existence or non-existence of this little book, then lost in obscurity, was offered by Mr. Rufus Griswold as an example of what he called Poe's lying nature. This position was accepted until 1880, when John Ingram found a copy in the library of the British Museum. Today, only 12 copies are known to exist. As much as $172,000 has been paid at auction. Some say even that it is worth far, far more. Even though most copies are imperfect. Mr. Poe, I would imagine that Tamerlane and Other Poems meant a great deal to you because it was your first publication. Oh, well, Mr. Bartley, may I recite two selections from Tamerlane and Other Poems? Certainly, Mr. Poe. We would be delighted. First, my poem, Dreams. Ah, that my young life were a lasting dream, my spirit not awakening till the beam of an eternity should bring the morrow. Yes, though that long dream were of hopeless sorrow, 'twere better than the cold reality of waking life. To him whose heart must be and hath been still upon the lovely earth, a chaos of deep passion from his birth. But should it be the dream eternally continuing, as dreams have been to me in my young boyhood, should it thus be given? 'Twere folly still to hope for higher heaven, for I have reveled when the sun was bright in the summer sky, in dreams of living light and loveliness, have left my very heart in climes of mine imagining, apart from mine own home, with beings that could have been of mine own thought. What more could I have seen? 'Twas once, and only once, and the wild hour from my remembrance shall not pass. Some power or spell had bound me. 'Twas the chilly wind came o'er me in the night and left behind its image on my spirit, or the moon shone in my slumbers in her lofty noon too coldly, or the stars, howe'er it was that dream was as that night wind. Let it pass. I have been happy, though but in a dream. I have been happy, and I love the theme. Dreams, in their vivid coloring of life, is in that fleeting, shadowy, misty strife of semblance with reality, which brings to the delirious eye more lovely things of paradise and love, and all our own than young hope in his sunniest hour hath known. And finally, Visit of the Dead. Thy soul shall find itself alone, alone of all on earth, unknown the cause, but none anear to pry into thine hour of secrecy. Be silent in that solitude, which is not loneliness, for then the spirits of the dead who stood in life before thee are again in death around thee, and their will shall then o'ershadow thee. Be still, for the night, though clear, shall frown, and the stars shall look not down from their thrones in the dark heaven with light like hope to mortals given, but their red orbs without beam to thy withering heart shall seem as a burning and a fever which would cling to thee forever, but 'twill leave thee as each star in the morning light afar will fly thee and vanish, but its thought thou canst not banish. The breath of God will be still, and the mist upon the hill by that summer breeze unbroken shall charm thee as a token and a symbol which shall be secrecy in thee. Well, thank you, Mr. Poe. Now, I understand that in the year 1827, your battery arrived at Fort Moultrie on Sullivan's Island off Charleston, South Carolina. Yes, Mr. Bartley, and for a literary connection, I was later to write a story by the name of The Goldbug that became one of my most popular stories. Yes, definitely one of the most popular stories that I ever wrote during my lifetime. Notice my description in The Goldbug regarding the area immediately regarding Fort Moultrie. It explains what one might need to know about the area. I wrote, "The island consists of little else than the sea sand, and it is about 3 miles long. Its breadth at no point exceeds a quarter of a mile. It is separated from the mainland by a scarcely perceptible creek, oozing its way through a wilderness of reeds and slime, a favorite resort of the marsh hen. The vegetation, as might be supposed, is scant, or at least dwarfish. No trees of any magnitude are to be seen. Near the western extremity, where Fort Moultrie stands, and where are some miserable frame buildings, tenanted during summer by the fugitives from Charleston dust and fever, that may be found, indeed, the bristly palmetto. But the whole island, with the exception of this western point and a line of hard, white beach on the sea coast, is covered by a dense undergrowth of the sweet myrtle, so much prized by the horticulturists of England." Well, Mr. Poe, did you stay in the Charleston area? Oh, no, Mr. Bartley. During December of 1828, my battery arrived at Fort Monroe at Old Point Comfort, Virginia. And on the first day of 1829, I was promoted to Sergeant Major of the Regiment of Artillery. So it seems that you had become immersed in military life, Mr. Poe. So it seems, but on February the 28th of 1829, Frances Keeling Allen, my doting and dearest foster mother, died in Richmond. She was buried in the Shaco Hill Cemetery on March the 2nd. I received the news of her death through a letter from John Allen. I must admit that the news was extremely difficult for me to accept. The loss of my foster mother deeply affected me, and many scholars feel that her death contributed to my already fragile mental state. Yes, Mr. Poe, especially considering the fact that Frances Allen was so loving and so extremely supportive. Then on April the 15th of 1829, I was released from the Army and applied for an appointment to West Point. To obtain my release, it was necessary for me to provide a substitute at no expense to the government. Well, thank you, Mr. Poe. This brings us to the final month of 1829, and what would generally be viewed as the beginning of the truly productive period of the second half of your earthly life. I'm not going to go into your second book, Alarife, Tamerlane, and Minor Poems, in this episode. We'll save that for the future. Thank you, Mr. Bartley. I trust that this and the preceding episode have brought us up to date and prepared this podcast listeners for the more productive period of my literary life. Join us for the next episode of Celebrate Poe, the first part of 3 episodes dealing with choices in Poe's life. And I think you're going to really enjoy it. Sources include Edgar Allan Poe, A Critical Biography by author Hobson Quinn, The Poe Log, A Documentary Life of Edgar Allan Poe by Dwight R. Thomas and David K. Jackson, Edgar Allan Poe, The Man by Mary E. Phillips, Edgar Allan Poe by George E. Woodberry from the American Men of Letters series, and Life of Edgar Allan Poe by Eugene L. Didier. Thank you for listening to Celebrate Poe.